This podcast was recorded in a working office. We are a working farm after all. There is a bit of background noise. We're sorry about that.
Welcome to this issue of the podcast. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Claire.
Good morning, Richard.
We have a coffee. It's freezing cold down on the farm. So we're back talking about Omega 3 today as part of this Flax Farm podcast series and Flax Farm and Health. So, Omega 3, what does it do? Why do we need it? What's it good for? Claire?
Right, let's start with linseed oil, flaxseed oil. Both the same, linseed and flaxseed oil are both the same thing in this context. Going back approximately 20 years ago, my life was in crisis and a friend of mine came round with this bottle of linseed, cold pressed linseed oil, and it was actually fairly disgusting. And my immediate reaction to it was, look, I don't take supplements. And he said, it's not a supplement. Omega-3 is an essential nutrient. It's like vitamin C. Where are you getting your omega-3 from otherwise? And I thought about it and realised I wasn't getting any omega-3 significantly. And because I didn't have any money at the time, and it was actually food, I decided to accept his offer of a bottle of linseed oil. And it wasn't particularly nice tasting, so I put a teaspoon in a smoothie with a banana, some orange juice, and a few berries. And it wasn't too bad. And I did that for three mornings. And on the fourth morning, when I got up, all of a sudden I didn't have dry skin anymore. I was absolutely flabbergasted, and I knew that the only thing I'd done was start taking linseed oil. And I said to him, do you think this could be the linseed oil that's made my skin not dry anymore? Oh yes, he said, it does that sort of thing. Anyway, I was blown away and carried on taking it. Took two teaspoons a day. And along the way, the rosacea that I had that was causing the dry skin just disappeared, and people kept on saying, oh, you've got a really good skin. I was thinking, no, I haven't got rosacea. When I looked in the mirror, the rosacea had gone. And aching back, that disappeared, the joints stopped being a problem. But the other thing I found very interesting was that even though my life was in crisis, I for the first time ever got this feeling of sort of mental well-being, the one where you sort of go, in a nice sort of way.
That zen moment.
That was it. And I thought, gosh, that's what well-being is. So anyway, I carried on with the linseed oil, and along the way, I've been really impressed with all the things that omega-3 do. Sometimes you start taking it for granted, and then you have a think and realise how much you really need and how much it does in the body. So linseed oil, flaxseed oil, is one of the best sources of omega-3 there is. It might have some other magic in there as well, because over the millennia, it's always been the one that has been recommended by nutritionists and people on diets for sort of solving this, that and the other. Omega-3, flax oil is approximately 50 to 60 to even 70% omega-3, but the higher percentage doesn't really make much difference whether it's 50 or 70%. It's omega-3. So why do you need omega-3? All goes back to the fact that naturally we're designed to have omega-3 in balance with omega-6. Our ancestors, when they were hunter-gatherers running around the plains of Africa hunting down gazelles, they would bring back a gazelle that had eaten grass, and grass gives them the perfect ratio of omega-3 to omega-6.
That makes sense now, Claire.
Where do you find omega-6? In grass? Or?
Omega-3 and omega-6 are both found in grass. They are the essential fatty acids. Omega-3 is an essential fatty acid, omega-6 is. We actually do need more omega-6 than omega-3, by about two or three times the amount.
We're on the plains of Africa. I've just killed a tick-tick, duck-duck, whatever they call them.
A gazelle.
Killed a gazelle.
Yep.
And so
I've brought it back for everybody.
Dragged it back to the village.
Yep.
And so I'm eating that.
And we now eat the whole thing. And this is actually quite interesting, that the bits of the carcass that were really favoured were the things like the eyeballs, testes are always sort of jolly good, and various other squishy bits like
that. I'm a celebrity.
You're falling a little bit sick. We've got ostrich anus coming up any second now. So
though the eyeballs, the bone marrow, the testes and various other squishy bits, and the brain are the major sources of omega-3.
So this is why they're a delicacy.
This is why everybody's known they've been good stuff for years. Somehow they knew. But everything gets eaten, but the gazelle has only eaten grass and a few little shrubs that grow around on the plain of Africa. And it gives them just the right ratio of omega-3 to omega-6. And because we were eating that, our species learnt to make that the ideal ratio as well. That was what we were designed to eat for optimal health.
Yeah.
And the whole thing went hunky-dory for ages, because the gazelles were eating grass, we were eating gazelles, we were getting what we needed. As time moved on and we started growing more grains and farming, the grains actually have no omega-3 in, they have a bit of omega-6.
Oh, that's why. Now I know why.
There's their grafting.
Yeah.
And also we started cultivating oil seeds, because oil seeds provide energy and a good energy source as well, but they tend to be omega-6 based.
Right.
Or omega-9. Very few plants have omega-3 in. They're very, very rare in nature. It's a harder thing for people, for nature to grow. It takes more sort of energy to make omega-3. So in the food crops that we grow, they're slower growing and things like that. It isn't as easy to grow a crop with omega-3 in as it is with omega-6. Consequently, as farming progressed, we learnt to feed cattle on grains. So they're getting lots of omega-6 from corn and maize and things like that.
Yeah.
They also get residues from things like sunflowers and the sunflower oil residue from pressing the oil out of it. Now, those are all omega-6 rich. There's no omega-3 in sunflower seed. There's no omega-3 in corn oil. And all these residues that get fed to the cattle are still high in omega-6, but no omega-3. So your animals, rather than grazing naturally and getting the right ratio of omega-3 to omega-6, is getting way too much omega-6. And virtually no omega-3.
So we're breeding it out. We're basically stopping them eating the omega-3.
Yeah, that
starts
to make sense now, isn't it? Because we are what we eat, but we are actually what that ate.
Yeah.
And so if what they're eating is not good enough for us, then we don't...
Then we're not getting
we're
it
not
either.
Getting it. We're not getting it either. So. Yeah.
So we've gone back to olden times where they're eating the grass and we were getting a good balanced diet. Well, we're farming.
We're not getting it. No, they're not getting it.
And a lot of cattle don't really eat grass much anymore. So even the fats that are going into your cheese, your cream and things like that have got more of an omega-6 bias. And the other thing that's an advantage for fattening cattle and producing meat is that omega-6 is fattening. So if you want to fatten your pigs and your chickens, make sure they've got plenty of omega-6 in it, because they will grow faster and bigger and fatter, but not necessarily in a healthy way, because they haven't got so much omega-3, which is why the physical shape of things like pigs and battery chickens and the chickens, the broiler chickens that we eat for, you know, roasting and frying and things, they're all flabby, horrible, useless creatures, and they're not really very healthy either. Because of this imbalance of fats in them, it contributes to them being a healthy
on
chicken.
On that point, I was reading a while ago that modern chickens have a far higher fat content than they'd ever done previously in history.
Didn't I just say that?
Yeah, no, but just a particular bit of chicken. And so,
because you want the more weight, the more you can get. You have, if you're fattening your chicken for market, you can only have a certain amount of fat in it, because too fatty customers might start complaining. However, you want to be right up there to the maximum fat, because it's the quickest way to get the market weight that you want to get that bird up to in order to ship it out to get the maximum price.
Absolutely.
So you get a more, you say it's efficient, that if you give them loads of omega-6, they will get fatter and heavier more easily on that than they will with an omega-3 diet. So you want to keep that omega-6 in there for making fat chickens, but this is not a farming program.
Nor is it a medical program.
No, but we're going to go down and sort of say a lot of the problems that you see with human health is as a result of these chickens, pork and things like that, getting lots of omega-6 in their diet, not enough omega-3. So that comes through to our diets. The other thing we do is we tend to cook with cooking oils, which tend to be heavily omega-6 Right. And very little or no omega-3.
Okay, yep.
Now, we've also got olive oil in there, which although olive oil is a fairly neutral oil, it is mainly omega-9, which is fairly neutral, and it's got some good little compounds in there that are good for heart health and antioxidants and phytochemicals and that are good for us. It hasn't got omega-3, and that is one of the reasons that omega-6, that is one of the reasons that olive oil, because it's actually got lots of omega-6 in there proportionately, because it's got no omega-3, and it's the ratio thing that's important. So I think you've got about 30% omega-6 in olive oil, but no omega-3. So every time you have some olive oil, you are getting a wallop of omega-6. Now, that actually helps to make you fatter, like it did with the pigs. And it contributes particularly to sort of big, round, fat tummies, and probably contributes to the Mediterranean area being a hotbed of diabetes. There's lots of hotbed areas and where it actually is world record beating diabetes in the population. Now, olive oil is fine and carry on eating it, just make sure it's balanced with omega-3 from flaxseed oil, and that's really a healthy way to do it. The Mediterranean diet we all think of as being very healthy, but what we're thinking of as a healthy Mediterranean diet is based on somebody who has their little garden in their back, their house. They grow their own vegetables, which grow beautifully out there.
So they live differently.
And the olive oil is cold pressed locally.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there are herbs that grow wild in their vegetable patch that's called purslane, and it's nature's richest source of herbal omega-3. And the peasants, literally, or the farmer, or the smallholder, whatever they are, they're going out, getting their lunch, getting a salad, and they grab a few handfuls of the omega-3 rich herb and chuck it in the salad. And very nice little herb it is too.
Yeah.
And then there's no worries about omega-3. Nobody ever sort of thought about it until recently, that this was where these people were getting their omega-3.
But this is like other, their modern lives and our modern diet, modern farming, modern supermarket shopping is causing this lack of omega-3 in our diet. We're no longer eating testicles and brains, apart from certain TV programmes.
And we're not growing our, well, we're going back to growing our own vegetables, but we don't grow our vegetables the way that the Mediterraneans do. We don't have the climate necessarily that they do.
Most people have gotten to plant any purslane, and in actual fact, it is a summer vegetable here, not a year-round one.
So just the climate and everything is making a difference about how much of a Mediterranean diet we can have. Would that importation of food reduce the content of its nutritional value? I mean, it's not going to be as great as if you...
Yeah, shipping and processing.
It isn't just the shipping and the processing, it's the mass production probably has knocked out more of the nutrients than anything else.
So you're
still getting nutrients, and you're probably much better having vegetables from the supermarket than you are having ready-made foods from
If I want to balance my diet, omega-3, omega-6, I can have my olive oil, but and how am I going to incorporate that omega-3 into my diet without it being an effort for me?
Right, the flax oil is really super. Well, flax farm flax oil, and I'm biased. We do make a big effort to make it taste nice, and it's one of the things we're really famous for, is making nice tasting flax oil that isn't too bitter. It's always fresh. You always get it straight after it's been pressed. And then it is a mild oil. It's very easy to get omega-3, and I've noticed the difference in my body since having omega-3. What do I use it in? What a lot of customers use it for is they want their omega-3 because they know it's good for them and it gives them benefits. And a lot of people will put it in their porridge first thing in the morning because you start thinking, I need my omega-3 because you've actually had some benefit, things like your fingernails grow better, your hair grows better, your joints don't hurt as much. Gosh, I need to get my omega-3 into my diet. First thing in the morning is your usual thought, put it in your porridge. If you don't have porridge, put it in a yoghurt. Now, I know that skim milk yoghurts are really boring. Your fat-free yoghurts are really sort of watery and boring. If you put a few teaspoons of linseed oil into it, it's lovely. It's creamy and rich and lovely tasting. Add a bit of ground linseed for a bit of fibre. Add a few berries from antioxidants, and you've really got perfect breakfast.
Yeah.
And it is gorgeous. And we've got lots of variations on that on the website. I have it with stewed apple. at my best way recently for having flaxseed oil is cocoa with some flaxseed oil in it at night, with a little bit of stevia as a sweetener, and a couple of teaspoons of rum with it.
I've not had chocolate or a cocoa at night for about 100 years.
Well, nor have I. I've never done it, and now I'm doing it every night. It's marvellous.
I tell you, at this time of year, because we're doing lots of things with potatoes at home, I find that using it like a butter substitute.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of putting butter in my mashed potato, I put the linseed oil
and it's lovely.
Mashed potato. And really creamy.
And it's a lovely flavour, nice. And you don't really notice that it's not butter or anything.
No, not at all.
A lot of people who are following the Overcoming Multiple Sclerosis, the OMS recovery plan diet,
mm-hmm.
use the linseed oil instead of butter. There's a lot
of
ways.
There's a lot of ways
of making it into a butter, but quite honestly, it's just as good to drizzle a little bit of it over. And the OMS people are on about 8 teaspoons of linseed oil a day.
Yeah.
And more or less, I've been following that diet now for
they
a long time.
They have to find
because I've got autoimmune conditions.
Yeah.
I've been following that for a long time. And it's surprising how easy it is to actually get that much into you. By the time you've had it into something like your porridge for breakfast, you put it in a smoothie. They have dairy-free yogurts. We can put it in that. You mash it in your potatoes. You make a salad dressing with it. It's nice on greens as well. If you've got fish, you've got baked fish. Just drizzle a bit over it. And it adds to it. Pesto made with it is fantastic. And pesto doesn't have to just be ordinary pesto. It's basically linseed oil, garlic, and any herbs, which is really just a green sauce. And a dollop of that, lentil soup, a vegetable stew or a bit of cooked fish is just heaven.
Lovely.
It's even good in baked beans.
Yeah, because we sometimes have butter to bake beans to make them a bit creamier, especially the cheaper ones.
Not Worcester sauce.
Oh, and that.
Worcester sauce and butter. Here we go. Transform your baked bean life now.
Anything, especially, it's always these beany things. If you're not careful, things with beans and lentils can go very bland.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right, add a good dollop of linseed oil.
Yeah.
Some nutritional yeast, unless you're somebody that eats cheese, and some Worcester sauce or soy sauce, and a little sort of spray of cayenne pepper, and give it all a good stir, and I'll tell you what, it transforms anything.
Beans are now completely jazzed.
So you've learned some loads of stuff today, guys. We've learned that linseed's got omega-3 in it. We've learned the fact that we can transform beans. And we can replace our testicles in our diet.
Talking about your
testicles.
Talking about your testicles is something I did miss out. Flaxseed oil is a very high source of omega-3. As we've said, we're very short of omega-3 in our diet. And it is an essential fatty acid. Our bodies have to have it for maximum correct function. And it's used in every cell and every body process that goes on in our whole body, whether it's skin, blood cells, brain cells, and every other process, including digestive enzymes, you have to have it there somewhere in that system. And without it, your body can't make cells the right way because it is a building block of the outside cell walls.
Yeah.
And if your cell wall isn't working properly, it becomes floppy and useless and or too stiff and useless.
Look, Lee can't help herself this morning. I mentioned testicles and that's where we're at today.
It's also an aid to fertility. So one of the contributory factor to fertility for men and women.
Yeah.
And this actually goes right back to Jana Budwig mentioning it in the 1950s, that there was a big link between not enough omega-3 and male and female infertility. A lot of the problems that women get, like polycystic ovaries, endometriosis,
back to
the imbalance of omega-3 and omega-6. Yeah. And it's because when you haven't got omega-3 in sufficient quantity, rather than the whole body and all its processes going along like a well-oiled sewing machine, it tends to switch processes on and off too slowly. So
sometimes
it's a switching off and sometimes it's a switching on. One of the quickest, sort of one of the most obvious ones is dry eyes. And people with dry eyes go off to their optician and go, "Oh, I've got dry eyes." And the optician said, "Get yourself some linseed oil."
Yeah,
you don't
like them to say that.
They do say it. But the thing is that it's not that you put it in your eyes, you take the linseed oil, it's high in omega 3, and then your body switches on the tears when you need it and switches them off when you don't need it.
Mm.
And that's the same thing throughout the whole body. So it sort of wakes up the body to perform really like it should do. Moving on to the next one, that it isn't just processes in the body, it's also things like making the muscles like they should be, or really, I suppose it's a response to a stimulus. After taking flaxseed oil, I started going back to the gym again, sort of the wrong side of 55.
Yep.
And I decided to start running and going to the gym. And to my amazement, I was getting muscles like no tomorrow. And having spent all my years from, you know, teenage upwards trying to get rid of my fat tummy by doing sit-ups all day long, getting nowhere, all of a sudden I was starting to get muscles and toned up really easily. And if I went to the gym and we started doing some new exercises, it was all a case of, what's that? I've got a muscle there. And it would happen within 2 or 3 days, I would start noticing a new muscle in response to new exercise. I'm fairly toned even now that I've had an injury. I'm still fairly toned. I still muscle up really easily, you know, 20 years on. And interestingly, at when I've been out at farmers' markets and talking to customers, I've met men who, again, wrong side of sort of 55, have said to me, I'm so pleased with this, it's the first time in 20 years I've actually found myself building new muscle.
Yeah.
And I'm really building muscle easily. So what it probably is A, it's giving you the building block you needed for that muscle, but it's also the one that is helping to relay the message that came from you doing the exercise to say, hey, you've just done a new exercise, you need to build a muscle. And that's a body process where your body steps up to the mark of what's being asked of it. And that's very typical of having the right level of omega-3. If you have too much inflammation, your body doesn't respond to the stimulus the way it should do. And the last thing about omega-3 that is very good, and I'm rather chuffed about, is having been rather a sort of chunky monkey all my life and being very aware of being decidedly chubby.
Are we allowed to say chubby anymore?
Oh. Well, she's referring to herself, so she can
say
what she
likes. Yeah, it's fine. Chubby's acceptable on this podcast.
Definitely borderline fat.
Again, referring to herself.
I had to be very careful with what I ate. I then started getting more omega-3 in the diet, eating differently, found it much easier not to have cravings, and toning up, I think, also helped the fact that I could actually burn calories off more freely. But what you also discover is that it actually, the omega-3 helps to make your fat hormones, metabolism hormones, which is insulin, leptin and ghrelin, work the way they should. So it actually encourages you to use the sugars and the carbohydrates that you've eaten in your diet. It encourages you to use them as energy for your muscles and brain, hopefully. That you also are using it to build muscles with. It also helps you to recognise when you're hungry, because when the leptin and ghrelin stop working, you stop recognising when you've had enough to eat. Feel cravingly hungry because nobody's actually made the hormones work the right way to say, we're not hungry anymore. Mm. So that hunger hormone stays switched on.
Yeah.
And as I said earlier, a lot of it is to do with it switching things on and off correctly. You might always be a little bit prone to eating a bit more than you should, because that's just human nature. We're greedy people, creatures. But if you have more omega-3, it's just common over and over again that people actually find it much easier to control their appetite. And also, you tend not to put your weight, when you do eat more than you should, you tend to put it more into your body rather than into your abdomen. So it doesn't do the abdominal fat, is it called?
Yeah.
So it stops that, and it actually helps you to burn off calories more freely. In India, for a long time, in the colder parts of India, it's been considered a winter food, where they get out the linseed in winter because it actually makes you burn calories more freely. When you're burning calories more freely, it's like having your own little furnaces all over your body, and it makes you feel warmer. And it's why now I live in a horrible cold house that everybody else hates, and I don't care a monkey bag.
I can assure you it is cold over here.
Absolutely.
But I really, and I actually like the cold now, and you know, I'm really happy absolutely. With it.
So I'm going to buy a bottle of linseed. How much would you recommend that I take?
Depends on age, health state, and things like that.
We're going to find
where
out
your
how
current,
old Lee is
and,
now.
And where your current dart is.
How old are you,
but
Lee?
If,
go on, tell
if,
us, Lee.
If,
I'm the wrong side of 55. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say.
So how much should Lee have?
Okay, for sort of youngster, and bear in mind it's a food. It's not a drug or anything like that. So you want to have a sensible amount. If you're somebody who is young, you've eaten fairly healthily, you haven't been eating masses of fried food, you're not using masses of frying oils and all those sort of things. If you have a teaspoon a day, you'll probably notice the benefit.
A teaspoon a day.
All right. If you're younger. When you hit up to about 40, you probably ought to be on 2 or 3 teaspoons a day. And if you've actually got issues, like your cholesterol's high or your joints are bad, it might well be worth stepping it up quite considerably in autoimmune conditions. And you can be up to something like 40 mil a day.
What would that be, a dessert spoonful, a tablespoonful?
3 tablespoons, sort of 2 to 3 tablespoons a day. For most conditions that are acquired conditions, not things like autoimmune conditions, because you ought to go and follow the Overcoming MS diet and do what they say. But for general things where you've got aches and pains and dry skin and blurt type things, yeah, take a bit more to begin with, because you've got a whole body made the wrong way.
Yeah.
So you've got to actually start soaking some omega-3 in, a bit like if you've got a bit of old dry wood and you get some polish, you can put polish on and it goes in and goes in and goes in until you can get a shine on it.
Yeah.
And then you just need a little bit to top it up.
Right.
And it's a bit like that with your flax oil. So if you start off with a good dollop of it, like 2 or 3 tablespoons a day, that should start to help you get on top of the problem that you've got. And once you're on top of it, you can cut right back down and just have about a teaspoon or two a day. But keep it in ratio. In your own head, you've got to work it all out. Because if you're still using these frying oils and things like that, cooking oils, you're probably getting more omega-6. And if you're eating a lot of chicken and factory-farmed pork or things like that, you're getting a lot of omega-6s in that way. You don't want that. So then you probably need a more omega-3.
Yeah.
Or maybe start thinking about cutting down on the fatty meats or something.
Lovely.
So, if you're feeling like an old bit of dried wood and want to be like polished teak and you're the wrong side of 55,
thanks a lot.
Then what you need to be doing is taking some linseed oil.
And there's a very good way of getting, if you've really got some multiple issues and of a certain age, whichever that is, have a look at the Budwig diet, which is Budwig diet, and there's a website called budwig-diet.co.uk, and that explains how to follow the diet. And it was created by Dr. Joanna Budwig in the 1950s to overcome an awful lot of conditions, and it's a very good reset for somebody who really is sort of creaking at the joints and everything's not quite right and the head's gone fuzzy and you're not happy and digestion's gone to pot. Linseed oil even helps the digestion. It calms down overactive digestions, and it also helps with slow digestion because it helps to work out the various hormones that you need to wake up the process that is meant to be doing something. The Budwig diet is absolutely great for a really good reset or a bit of convalescence or whatever you need just to get you back in order again. And maybe even following part of the Budwig diet on a daily basis for one meal a day to keep things ticking. And then you don't have to think much about what else you do.
Perfect, look at that. If you need some more help on this, then get over to flaxfarm.co.uk where drop us an email, let us know what your concerns are and we'll get back to you. So thanks for taking your time out to listen today. Goodbye from me, goodbye from
Lee, goodbye,
and goodbye.
Goodbye from Claire.